So I was thinking, before we go out on Prikram, it's nice to hear something because it can focus the mind on what we've come to do. There are different levels on which people can perform Prikram. The highest level, we'll read to you at a little bit later on, is given by the disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur when they describe the mood in which one should approach a Prikram in the Holy Dham. And then we can go down from there and find our own level, but we should try very hard to stay higher than we find comfortable, rather than lower than we find comfortable in our own mind and dealings. So when thinking about these pastime places, the most important thing, of course, is to go to these places and hear the pastimes in the places themselves, because this creates a very deep impression on the heart. But we also have to remember that these pastimes are seemingly so similar to what we hear of in this world. So if we go there cold, I have oftentimes taken a group of devotees somewhere. I remember one time some devotees came straight from the West and they said, "We want to go to Radhakund, and could you come with us?" And so I said, "All right." And we got there, and I wasn't prepared, and they certainly weren't prepared. And when we got there, I sort of said, "This is Radhakund. If you want to take a bath, you can take a bath." And they quickly took a bath and I said, "Let's go now." Because it really wasn't, they weren't ready, and I wasn't ready to speak on the confidential nature of the place. And therefore it didn't evoke, it just didn't come. And I sort of was looking at, thinking to myself, isn't there more I can say? There's so much to say. But nothing actually came out. So much of what one speaks at these transcendental places, the relationship between the person who's being used, you could say, as the microphone for Krishna to speak to the devotees, and the devotees, so much of it has to do with the receptivity of the two personalities involved, the speaker and the hearer. And if that's there, then just naturally there's such a flow comes, just as Maharaj was describing when we were chanting and the cows came. And for those who have not seen, we actually all had a chance to see what the cows did the other days. They all just quietly walked by. And it's most atypical, very unusual, that a herd of cows stop and they all prick up their ears and they stand there and stare at a group of Westerners, because anywhere in Vraj, the cows, they just quietly keep walking. They're interested in their food. But to stop like that was most amazing. So that was Giriraj reciprocating with us, something very delicate, something that you don't normally, I have never seen that before, that they just stopped and stood for that time, and the man was trying to move them on and they didn't want to go. So we should be very much trying to be in this mood of wanting to understand, I'm in the Holy Dham and I want to hear the pastimes in the Holy Dham. I need to hear them because I have to go back to the West. And how am I going to keep these impressions if they don't become very deep? So I would like to read you some little sections from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Krishna Samhita, where he's speaking to us and explaining to us the nature of the pastimes. So first of all, he explains to us, just as I was going to say, I said to you that the pastimes here, they're similar to those we see in the material world. We will go to Manasi Ganga and talk about boating, young girls getting in a boat with a young boy. And anywhere in the West you can see this on a nice lake, and the young boys and girls are playing together in this way. So he explains that the variegatedness seen in the material world is only a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. This is so important to keep reminding yourself, because we'll automatically fall into the other way round. We'll think, oh, I know about this pastime. I remember boats. Oh, yes, I remember boating. So much fun. But we have to always be trying to say, no, this, what I know, is a shadow reflection of this. This is the reality, therefore I have to hear it very carefully. He says, the difference between the material and spiritual worlds is this. In the spiritual world, everything is blissful and faultless. Whereas in the material world, everything is a temporary mixture of happiness and distress. A temporary mixture. So we have to look at anything in our lives and we'll see it's always a mixture. There's never just a blissful experience that doesn't carry with it something that's somehow or other disturbing. Full of impurities arising from the time and place. Therefore, the descriptions of the spiritual world are not imitations of those of the material world. Rather, they are our most coveted ideals. So then he goes on to explain what it is that makes us think in this way, that the material is the reality and the other thing is like some pleasant story, up to the point when the translators of the Vedic literature in the British Indologists, when they came, they immediately used the word mythology. They put this word to all the pastimes. And we all know that the word mythology comes from the word myth, and myth comes from something that is, somebody believes it. It's a superstitious idea. So he explains that this Maya potency, which is the maidservant of the supersoul, is his description, the maidservant of the supersoul. Therefore, this Maya potency converts spiritual characteristics into material characteristics. Maya, the external potency, covers the living entity, so she is the mother of illusion and a maidservant of the supersoul. So it is this Mayic potency that causes us to see the spiritual as material. And if we want, we can have that converted. To the degree that we want to convert that, it's possible to do so. He explains that when the marginal potency, that's ourselves, interacts with the spiritual energy of Ladini Shakti, which is the potency that Srimati Radharani embodies, it manifests devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And this devotional service nullifies the material conception of the Lord. Automatically it is nullified. So as it's nullified in this way, then we can begin to actually appreciate the transcendental nature of the Dharma and the pastimes. So then he goes on to explain what is the position, although we are just about to go on Prikram, so it seems to be irrelevant, but I think it is it to be important. What is the position when the living entity is obliged to actually follow regulative principles and not just to wander into Vraj, and become like a feral Vrajbasi, which is very popular and is very fashionable at the present time. He explains that the main purport of the regulative principles is that when the conditioned living entity's constitutional duties or his love for Krishna is almost dormant or pervertedly reflected as attachment for material objects, then whatever the learned doctors prescribe in order to cure the disease are called regulative principles. While wandering in the material world, a great personality is able to arouse his attachment by certain activities. He bestows his mercy on the living entities by establishing those activities as a form of spiritual practice. So a great personality comes here and can wander here and there, and then they can explain to us how they arouse their own spiritual activities. But practically speaking, a great personality is already capable of experiencing the Dharma. But they give this, they act as a conditioned soul, and then they perform a process of devotional activity so that we who really are conditioned souls, we can follow that. He bestows his mercy on the living entity by establishing those activities as a form of spiritual practice. The prescriptions given by those great personalities must be followed by the Kanista Adhikaris as though they were scriptural injunctions. The sages who establish these prescriptions are all Uttam Adhikaris. Those persons who cannot awaken attachment by their own efforts have no alternative other than to follow these prescriptions. Those regulative principles that are followed in order to awaken one's attachment while cultivating Krishna consciousness should also be followed with gratefulness long after the attachment has been awakened, so that people can follow that example. This is so important, that especially this is Srila Prabhupada's mood. He follows in the line of Bhaktivinoda Thakur strictly on this, that to set an example we have to act in a particular way. So when we take that our spiritual life is the most important thing, and therefore we can afford to do whatever we think is important for us and ignore and avoid setting an example that can be followed by others safely, then we fall astray, we fall victim to this combination of good and bad, or happiness and distress, and our path is no longer purely following in the footsteps of this the previous acharyas in how to purify our hearts and enter into the Dharma. So I would also like to say, and there's one other very interesting, actually I'll read you one last quote which I found very mysterious that I read this morning, about how Krishna travels with us. He says, "After careful consideration and by the mercy of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, we will herein briefly describe the activities of Krishna." So he's going to describe the science of understanding Krishna's pastimes. "The explanation of this science of Krishna that is presented in this book may be applied also to his different incarnations. The conclusion is that Krishna is the root, cause and seed of all incarnations. He is eternally enjoying pastimes with the living entities as the Supersoul. The Supersoul reciprocates according to the mood and realization of a living entity that he acquires while traveling on the path of fruitive activities. But Krishna does not personally appear until spiritual attachment arises in the hearts of the living entities. Therefore, all other incarnations appear from the Supersoul, of whom Krishna is the original seed." So Krishna is there. Within the heart, he acts as the Supersoul, and he reciprocates with us. What we want, he's going to give us that reciprocal perspective on life. If we want to develop our love for him, then he personally takes charge of his devotee's advancement. And from within and from without, he allows us to become spiritually advanced. So now quickly I would like to say that my reflection was that you can decide for yourselves what class of prikrami you want to become. So the first class prikram person, this is the description. "The very first principle, therefore, which is all intending circumambulators should accept in their hearts of hearts, is to attend fully to the instructions of the bona fide guide and prefer following them to every other occupation. If he tries to do this, he will find that the bona fide guide will put him to activities which may be neither such as are to his liking, nor what he had previously arranged for. The guru will upset all his prearranged plans. The pilgrim is not expected to be allowed to guide himself in any way, for it is the nature of the conditioned soul to be tempted to assume his own guidance, however much he may profess to be guided by another. It is not the journey or the parikram, but the method of its performance that really matters. Any journey that is performed under the lead of a sadhu is a spiritual function. No journey that is not so performed can have any spiritual value. The circumambulation of Sri Brajamandal has the further advantage of spiritual association, which is of great help to the novice on the path of spiritual endeavor. The novice is in a position on such an occasion to be put in mind by the sadhu that he is never to attend to the scene at all, because what he will see, if he does so, is not the thing which he should see, but something else, the sight of which will be obstructive, to the real function for which he is out on his pilgrimage. So last year when I spoke about Dharmtattva, I spoke on a lower level because I was coming in with the same kind of struggles as I was aware that the devotees in general would have. So I commented that the first level of prikram is that you just take in the atmosphere, everything. Anything you see is beneficial because it alters your cultural experience. It shifts you from thinking that the West is where reality lies and you start to see another way of life. But this is a very external aspect of the Dharma. So here, the circumambulation that was taking place under Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, those personalities already had the culture. They were Indian, so they had no need to look at the way the barber shaves and look at the way the shops are and look at the simplicity of the life and look how they carry this on their head and carry that on their head and look at the bullocks and how they use carts and so on and so forth. They had no need for that level. They began on the level, very high level, just listen, just follow, because what you see is not what's there. He says, the sadhu himself will see everything very carefully. So this is not ourselves. But in this case, what we're going to try to do is follow in the hearing from the sadhu who sees everything carefully. The sadhu himself will see everything very carefully and minutely, and he will never encourage the novice to any function of the kind. He doesn't say, you look at everything carefully, although it can be said because we're coming in on a particular level. If the novice submits to being so thwarted at almost every step and is prepared to do whatever the sadhu tells him to do with loyal faith, he will have gained the real object of his pilgrimage. Now he explains this. He says, it is for the purpose of inspiring a real regard for the transcendental realm of Braj in the minds of the circumambulators that this function has been manifest by the sadhu. So we're asked to have a real regard, to inspire a real regard for Braj by our circumambulation. The mundane realm enables the sadhu to do this in a concrete way. In the realm of Braj, real Braj, it is not jivas who enjoy the landscape. It is Krishna who is the sole enjoyer of that realm. The jivas have no other function but to minister to the pastimes of Krishna. The landscape of that realm is instinct with perfect spiritual life. That means it's completely perfect, the landscape of Braj. So the sadhu is a whole-time servitor of Krishna, and he can understand the directions of the spiritual realm. So therefore he can actually guide us to see properly. So we have to be, if we want to be first class, we have to completely disregard the mind as it goes this way and that way and says, I don't feel comfortable now, and it picks up a thought from our life here or something there and so on and wanders around. We have to catch the mind when it does that, and we have to bring it to attention and say, for this time that we're going around these places, no matter what anyone else is doing, you have to concentrate very carefully. You can concentrate on the holy name if you like. You can concentrate, if that wanders from the holy name, then concentrate on the pastime that you're hearing. Or concentrate on something that you heard of value when we were sitting out by the hill. But keep your mind within this realm and don't allow it to jump out and say, okay, this is the last day or I'm hungry or so many things. If you observe your mind, you'll watch it and you'll see that it will try to do these things. And you have to keep it under control. So first class preference is for the most serious and the best parikram persons is that they chant. They try to chant from place to place. If there's no kirtan, they chant on their beads and they try to keep their consciousness internalized, not just looking at everything. Oh, isn't that cute? Look at this, look at that. If you can't do that, if you're not up to that, you're not able enough to do that, then look at the scenery. And see that, yes, it's so different, it's so nice, everything is being used here for the purpose of Braj. And if you can't do that, at least don't talk about anything. Don't talk about anything outside of Vrindavan. Don't talk about anything to do with your family or your house or your anything. Don't do that. Just try to keep your mind disciplined on the fact that we're going to walk around to these places and we should be alert for Krishna to reciprocate with us, not to please us so we can enjoy, but he can reciprocate to our service of the Dhamma. And the service of the Dhamma becomes service of the Nam. Krishna's name becomes realized if we can serve the Dhamma. And then we can serve Krishna calm, and then our calm, or all our desires and all our feelings and thoughts, can become purified by the willingness that will arise in our heart to try somehow or other to please Krishna instead. So we'll go now. We'll first go to Manasi Ganga, and then we'll go on to Govindakund and walk from there, which is a very beautiful, peaceful part of Govardhan. It's the most beautiful part in the sense of Giriraj in many ways for walking, although there's no part of Giriraj that isn't beautiful in its own right. But we'll walk from there to Punchari, where Krishna performed the Rasa Lila, and we'll visit there Raghava Pandit's cave, where under the ground he chose to do his bhajan so he wouldn't be disturbed by anyone or anything, in a cave where Radha and Krishna performed their pastimes. And he was always, Raghava Pandit was always from head to foot covered in the dust of Braj. He was always rolling in the dust. He's one of the eight Sakis, one of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I think he's Champakalata, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll go and visit there, and then we'll walk from there to Surabhi Kund. And last year we also went to Surabhi Kund. Surabhi Kund, as we'll speak further when we're there, is a very important place, because it is there that the Surabhi cow prayed for Indra to nullify Indra's offences, because he had done such a terrible things, as we'll hear when we hear the pastime of lifting of Giriraj. And so that's a place where we all too can also really heartfeltly pray to remove anything from our heart that we would really like to have removed. We can pray in that place, and if we pray very sincerely, we should hope to get the mercy of Surabhi, who's very kind and who can give us the association of Krishna because she's so dear to him. This is not the Surabhi from the heavenly planets. This is the transcendental, actually is the Surabhi from the heavenly planets, but she's coming representing Indra, but she is also representing the transcendental cows of Vrindavan, who are all so dear to Nandanandan, Gopal. So I think we're ready now to take